Give me a scotch, I'm starving.
Welcome to this week's edition of Beers and Banter, a Mike and Colin podcast, the show where two longtime friends get together to enjoy adult beverages and talk nonsense about the stuff they love. This week we're talking Iron Man. All right, now two orders of business before we get started. One, this is a deep dive, so consider this your spoiler warning. And two, ostensibly, this is an adult show. There will occasionally be adult language fueled by adult beverages, so, earmuffs for all the little Padawans out there. How's it going, Mike?
It's good. How is your beer?
Really, really good.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. Dead Frog, you said?
Dead Frog, Warhead, Blackberry Imperial Sour.
Okay.
Yeah. It's 9%, which you would not know by drinking it.
No, absolutely not. This is a real troublemaker. I get up to all sorts of hijinks quick with this.
Yeah, because it's still nice and light. You could drink probably like five or six of these.
Oh, no problem.
And that would be a problem.
if things start to go south by the end of this podcast, then we'll know why.
Yeah. Sours are my favorite beer, and this one's one of my favorites. Really good.
Yeah, I've never had this one before, but I think I've had other Dead Frog Sours.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm surprised that this one is 9% and is this good.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, it makes me almost want to go there when we're done and get some.
I already was thinking about that.
So. Are we allowed to now that that COVID is done?
It's all open. Yeah.
Oh my God, we can go and drink a beer.
Yeah, you can have six people max, I think. So.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, we're gonna need it because we're doing it for Tony Stark today, talking about Iron Man.
That's right. Well, we need to drink more then.
getting a little leany. So. Yeah. Lots to say. Pretty pumped about this one.
Yeah. Well, you know how I love the Marvel movies, the MCU, so.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and this is really the one that started it all.
It is, yeah.
Everything that they did after this, really, this is the movie is the base. It's the foundation of
Yeah, it's funny. A lot of the decisions they made making this movie, like you said, set the groundwork and kind of the template of what they're going to do in the future.
Yeah. And upon a rewatch, it's funny because there are so many lines that you feel like are throwaway lines.
Yeah.
But they aren't in the greater overall scheme of not just this movie, but the other Iron Man movies, the MCU period in terms of like bringing a team together, right? And that kind of stuff. So it really, this is a standalone movie and it can be enjoyed as such, but we didn't know at the time it was going to lead to this huge thing.
No, and Marvel didn't know either, right? Kevin Feige, when they made this movie, it was intended to be a standalone because they really had no plan for the future. He always kind of wanted to push for the Avenger idea. Like, that was his thing, but they didn't know it was going to work out. They thought that maybe this would tie into the current properties owned by other companies, right? Like the Spider-Man and the X-Men. They thought that they might be able to tie him into that.
Okay.
That was kind of their idea because they didn't really have the massive scope that they obviously have now.
Yeah, because, I mean, not in a disrespectful way, but, like, the reason why Marvel has the properties that they have is because they were not the ones that were burning up the charts in terms of the comic books and stuff.
No, that's right. They had sold away all their highest-selling stuff. So,
yeah.
In fact, like, when they had Iron Man for a long time. They've had it longer than most. But it wasn't their intention to make that first. They were thinking about Captain America.
Oh!
But because it took so long to actually make the movie, they were able to do focus groups with kids. And with kids, Iron Man was the most popular, right? He's flashy. He's got the weapons and stuff.
Yeah.
So he was more popular than Captain America. So that's why they went with it.
Because Captain America just throws a shield.
Yeah, right.
He doesn't blow shit up or have a big cannon in his chest.
Come on, he's not as fun. Let's be honest. Yeah, he's not as fun as Iron Man.
Oh, he's nowhere near as fun as Iron Man.
So that's why they went with Iron Man as the first of the Marvel, the MCU, right?
Yeah, because looking at in that kind of context, They actually took a huge chance with this movie.
They did. They took a massive chance, but they also didn't. Like, they intended this movie to stand alone. They were honestly hoping to break even, make a little bit of money.
And kind of see where this goes.
And sell toys. That was really what their focus was. And then Kevin Feige was always kind of pushing, like, he's just the producer, right? He's not the one handing out the checks, you know, signing the money. So for him, he wanted to make it a bigger universe and do other movies and spinoffs and tie-ins. He always had that plan, but he couldn't force it upon it. He just kind of, that's why there's little seeds throughout this movie that he's put into there.
Yeah.
Just in case it would go somewhere. But at the same time, it's not.
There was no
obvious
roadmap at the
there's
time.
There's no obvious there's going to be a sequel. Even if the end that is now, you know, a staple of Marvel movies is after the credits, the teaser, that was put there on purpose because they didn't want to, two things. One, they didn't want to distract from the movie being like, well, why is Samuel Jackson all of a sudden here? What's going on?
Yeah.
One, and two, they didn't want it to be implied that there was actually going to be a sequel because they didn't know there was going to be. He put it there just for fun, for hardcore fans to be like, woohoo. That would be interesting, but not like, oh, it's going to happen.
But so much of the tenor and the tone and the aesthetic and all the things that we think about these movies are, even the humor, it all starts here.
It does.
You know, like all the things that we look to other MCU films, like even the shit in the credits, you know, like...
Well, that's a staple now. You expect a teaser after a Marvel, after the credits, right?
Yeah.
But that was put here
to the end.
It was specifically put here for a reason.
But it was new then.
It was brand new. It was the first time they did it, right?
Yeah. I mean, they'd done it in Ferris Bueller.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's not exactly something you did at films. It's have some nugget at the end or whatever, right?
No.
I think a big part of it, too, is that, and I know that Jon Favreau got fought on this, but he really wanted Robert Downey Jr.
Yes.
And Marvel did not.
It was huge. Exactly. Yeah. Well, Kevin Feige wanted Robert Downey Jr. as well.
Okay.
But it was the higher-ups that wanted... See, here's the sort of thing, like... It bleeds into the rest of the Marvel movies and the universe is they hired for talent, right? The fit for the character. So they wanted Robert Downey Jr. because they were like, he is Iron Man. Like, he is Tony Stark. When you look at his life and career, it's huge parallels. He brings exactly what we need to the table.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, the guys signing the checks were like, no, we need star power. We need someone to put on the poster that people are going to come see. Like, they wanted Tom Cruise or Nick Cage, believe it or not. The people that were...
I don't even want to know what that looks like.
No, neither do I. The guys they were pushing hard for before Robert Downey Jr. was Patrick Dempsey.
What?
And Colin Farrell.
Oh,
Can you imagine... Yeah, but can you imagine these movies with that? You can't imagine these movies with anybody but Robert Downey
Jr. No, there's, like, good casting, and then there's Hall of Fame casting, and then there's, like, GOAT casting.
Yeah.
And that's this tier.
Yeah.
I can't imagine... anybody else doing this?
No, exactly. And so they were right in pushing for him, but that kind of goes exactly into the next movies as well, is they hire for the actor for the talent and for the role, not for the name, which is something that is really important in Marvel movies and why they work so well, I think.
Yeah, because through the 20 plus movies or whatever, how often can you say that, like, oh, this guy or whoever was seriously miscast?
Yeah, very few.
Yeah, yeah. Like, there's not exactly a lot of sore thumbs
in the
MCU or whatever, right? But...
Well, I mean, look at the cast of this movie alone. It's an all-star cast. When you look, I mean, Jeff Bridges is the villain.
Yeah. Which is... I think that's why they made him shave his head.
They didn't make him. That was his choice.
Okay.
He actually read the comic.
Yeah.
And he said, like, I think I should shave my head for the role. It would be important. I was reading an interview with him, and he said that he always wanted to shave his head for a role, and this was a good excuse. But Jon Favreau said, no, I don't think we need to go that far, so they cut his hair. He had long hair, like, you know, dude.
That's exactly it. I figured he would have to be as least dude as possible.
That's right.
Or Alex from Tron or whatever. Yeah.
And he had the long hair when they, like, cast him.
Yeah.
And he said, I'll shave my head. And they were like, no, that's too severe or whatever. So they cut it a little bit shorter. And eventually he was like, man, I'm just going to shave my head. And he shaved his head, grew the beard. And Kevin Feige, when he walked in after doing that, was like, yeah, that was perfect. He's like, it was like he came out of the comic book.
And that's the other thing, along with Gwyneth Paltrow, too. You're right, is that, I mean, comic book movies to this point in, what, 2005, 2006, like, there had been a few X-Men movies, and there had been some notable casts, but not a lot of some all-stars in the X-Men movies, but it's kind of, you know, like Hugh Jackman is Wolverine. Well, he was nobody at the time.
He was nobody when he was hired, yeah.
Yeah. But, like, they're like, well, we have bankable stars in this movie. But really, it's Robert Downey Jr. who holds it all together.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. It became a great thing, but, like, however much he made and however much Jon Favreau made for this movie, considering everything that's happened since...
He made good very investment. Little for this movie compared to the other ones. Yeah. I mean, it's not very little in terms of small money, but it was very little compared to the next Iron Man, even.
Yeah, but I mean, from what it became, it was...
Yeah.
Because really, I mean, it all comes back to Tony Stark. To me, Tony Stark is one of the most fascinating personalities in all the comics.
Yeah.
That's just such a big character that if you get it wrong, well, you're going to fall short of the mark. The whole movie is going to fall short of the mark. Yeah. So I don't think I can understate how incredible Robert Downey Jr. is in this movie.
No, he hits the character like it's perfect. Like I said, part of that is that he came in and there wasn't really a full script. They had the story and the outline. Yeah. And even while making the movie, there wasn't a full script. So he had a lot of say into his character. But
yeah.
The big thing is he got his character. And yeah. he gets Tony Stark. So, I mean, and him being able to ad-lib and add lines just makes it perfect why he fits the role so well.
Yeah, I watched an interview Robert Downey Jr. did with Joe Rogan last night on his podcast, and he talked about the process, and that was exactly it. Like, Favreau and him, the dialogue wasn't mapped out at all.
No.
The road work is really just in the plot and the aesthetic, and I'm like, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jeff Bridges hated it because he's the type of guy, he said, he's like, I like to be prepared and like know my lines. And he's like, I would come and they'd be like, we don't have any. You got to come in
and just roll
and
with
this
it.
This is what's going to happen. And he's like, I hate it. He's like, oh, so we're making a super expensive student film. I get it.
Which is funny because he's a fucking musician.
Yeah. Well, he said, that, he also said that once he got it, he's like, at first it was very frustrating. He said, but once he got it and started rolling with it, he was just like,
you're like, dude, it's
he
not-
realized he could just play it loose.
Yeah. It's not classical, it's jazz. Just roll
that's
with it.
That's right, yeah.
Just make it up as you go.
Then he's like, it obviously, it came out amazing because he's like, it's exactly what we needed for this movie.
Because even I remember back in 2006 when this came out, I'm like, this movie is way better than it ever really needed to be or should have been.
Yeah.
You know, like, it could have been a less of a movie and probably made similar money.
Yeah.
Well, weirdly, right? Just because of the property.
I remember going to the movie in the theater, and yeah. I remember I was asked to go to it with a group of friends.
Mm.
And, with our buddy Lucas, he dragged me to it.
Okay.
And I remember going, well, it'll be fun. But like when I thought about other superhero movies at the time, the Spider-Mans, the X-Mens,
yeah.
the Fantastic Four, I thought, well, Iron Man, like those were more pinnacle characters. And look at the movies that came out of those.
Yeah.
And I thought this one, I'm like, well, it'll be fun to watch. And I was blown away. I remember leaving the theater being like, that was amazing.
Yeah. Because even upon rewatching it now, what actually blew me away is the aesthetic. They yes. nailed immediately.
Yeah.
For the most part, the effects have not aged at all.
No.
Like 14, 15 years later, the suit, it looks incredible.
Well, part of that
went out
is...
the gate.
Yeah, part of that is that Jon Favreau, two things. One, he really likes doing real effects mixed with CGI. It wasn't like... They could have done everything CGI, kind of like they lean... A lot of directors nowadays especially lean on that. And then...
I know Robert Downey Jr. was someday 7 hours in the suit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and which, you know... Another high commendation to him for doing that.
Yeah.
For it. But it does, you can tell it looks way better. Like,
yeah.
They designed a specific rig for his flying scenes when he's testing the suit out.
Yeah.
They designed a new rig so that it looked real as opposed to CGIing it. Like, Jon Favreau was like, I don't want it to look cheesy. Like, I want it. His biggest thing, his number one motto on the whole set was plausibility. He's like,
that
this
totally shines through because it is almost never cheesy in this movie.
Yeah, no, it's a superhero movie, but he's like, I want it to feel like it could be real. Like, that guy could make a suit and fly. He's like, I don't want it to be like, oh, it's magic.
Yeah, because 15 years later, you expect some cringy special effects.
Yeah, and
that doesn't happen in this movie.
No, like, they built the Ironmonger suit, which is like 10 and a half feet tall. Like, they built most of that.
Oh, wow,
and,
okay.
And it took like five guys to operate the arms and everything.
The Ironmonger is a real suit too, hey?
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
wow,
obviously
okay.
they use CGI for a lot when they're flying around and fighting and stuff, but like a lot of the scenes when they're still, like that's all real stuff.
Because I know that the suit design was partially Stan Winston.
Mm-hmm.
If you know Stan Winston, he's one of the famous costumers in
yeah.
Hollywood history.
Yeah,
and I don't know if you noticed
build
this.
The suits.
But because I noticed it upon my first watch, when they're fighting at the end, when he's fighting the Ironmonger, there's this one part where it has a shoulder cannon.
Yep.
And it has like a beam, an infrared beam. And I'm like, that is like the Predator.
Yeah.
And then I looked it up and I'm like, oh, I know why. It's a shout out to Stan Winston, who also designed the Predator.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, see, and I feel like Jon Favreau would have known that.
Yeah.
And included that as a cute thing in the movie, like a shout out, right? There are a couple moments in this movie which I feel like are direct references to other things. Like when Yinsen is charging down, like Tony's powering up the suit.
And he has to buy time.
And Yinsen has to buy time, yeah. And he's charging out the cave with the machine gun. What did that remind you of? It reminded me of Han charging down the
stormtroopers. Right, oh yeah.
Going, ah! And screaming and yelling and then turning the corner and they're all there and he's like, oh shit!
That
like,
is true, yeah.
Yeah, or when they find the suit out in the desert, there's a wipe and it's a side wipe.
Yeah.
And then they find the suit in the desert and I kept expecting to hear, looks are droids.
Yes, you know that's what I mean? Right. That's exactly what it reminded me of at that point, yeah.
Yeah, so there are a couple things in this movie which I think are kind of fun.
Yeah.
References, like, if you want to call them Easter eggs, whatever. But because like that's the thing. Like, it doesn't look like you have the ingredients to have that good of an action movie in this movie. And yet it turned out so good.
Yeah.
Again, Robert Downey Jr. wasn't exactly a bankable action star.
No, he was up and down and he obviously had his problems.
Yeah. I mean, Gwyneth Paltrow wasn't exactly making a lot of films at the time and hasn't since. You know, like, she's been more, I think, her lifestyle brand or whatever, right? But she's also very good in this.
She's excellent in this. And that's one thing they knew. Like, again, before they even had the script, right, they were able to get Gwyneth Paltrow. Because she heard about Robert Downey Jr. and Jon Favreau and stuff. And she was like, okay, let's do this.
She's like, this isn't going to be a joke
and as soon as
movie.
They,
this is going to be a good movie.
Yeah, as soon as they got her into screen tests and stuff with Robert Downey Jr., they were like, it was instant chemistry. They knew that they had the spot. Because she wasn't, like... They didn't write the role for her or whatever, right? She came in and was perfect for it, so.
Because she has to give that balance of emotional gravitas.
Oh, yeah.
And does such a great job of it.
Yeah.
Like, you always buy her concern for Tony.
Yeah. And she's the responsible one.
Well, not only is she the responsible one, but she has to reconcile kind of what I think of as pre-cave and post-cave Tony in this movie. Because this is a movie of the first act and then the rest of the acts.
Yes.
You know, like, it's very important to, it's literally a rock and roll Jesus kind of metaphor. He goes into the cave.
Yeah.
You know, even when they're torturing him, they dunk him in water. You know, he hears Pepper call his name.
Yeah.
And he's almost born anew. I'm like, from this point on, you know, Tony has a renewed sense of purpose and a borderline martyr complex. Like, there's a lot of Jesus-y imagery in this.
Right.
Like, and I was shocked upon rewatching it. I'm like, he is a Christ figure in a lot of ways. And it kind of explains his attitude going forwards.
Yeah.
Like his willingness to give his life.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of his purpose is kind of informed.
It's that's exactly finds his way.
Yeah.
Like early on, like the earlier Tony Stark, he is everything, right? He has the money and the women and the cars and whatever. Yeah.
But he's bored with life because he's not challenged.
He has no purpose.
Yeah.
So this is about a man finding his purpose. And even more so is about a man finding his heart, which is really symbolic with the arc reactor.
I was about to say another very
obvious overt
metaphor in this movie. Yeah,
that's right. But that's what it is. A man finding his heart and going through a life change.
Yeah.
Which is like you said, in the cave or whatever, that was about more about survival. I think the big scene is when he comes back and he gets the cheeseburger and he has the press conference.
Yeah.
And he kind of has an epiphany. He's like, I need to be responsible.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's a man who finds his heart, finds his way, and realizes that he has all this stuff for a reason.
Yeah. He is actually really devastated by the fact that the terrorists are using his weapons.
Yeah, exactly.
Where beforehand, as a war profiteer, he might not have had those kind of moral qualms. All of a sudden, these things that are bothering him that might not have bothered him before. Right. Plus, also, he has a good mentor in Yinsen when he's in the cave.
That is huge. I love the part where they're working together. He doesn't really trust him. He doesn't give him all the plans.
Yeah.
He makes the arc reactor. And then he works with him for a bit. And then he's like, hey, I'm Tony Stark. Nice to meet you. After he says, and that's after they've been working together for, it's kind of like a transformation. While. Yeah.
Yeah. But he's like, now we're brothers in arms in this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny because he flies back later to defend his village.
Oh, yeah.
It's the same village, Galinda or whatever.
That's right. It's a huge moment because he sees that it's that village.
Yeah.
And he's like on a mission. It's a revenge mission.
He's like, fuck.
And not for himself.
Not for himself.
Yeah.
You know, like it's something personal to him. Yeah. Right? He's like, well, I got to.
Defend Gulmira.
Yeah. Oh, Gulmira. That's it. Yeah. Because really, he doesn't consider the geopolitical ramifications of it at all, which is funny because he's an arms dealer.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I put Rhodey in hot water or whatever, right?
Yeah.
But it also really blows me away how they also sprinkle in so many lines that seem like throwaway lines, but are actually super important.
Yeah.
Like when Rhodey and him are first even flying over to Afghanistan in a private jet, you think it's just drunken banter what Rhodey is telling him. But the subtext is that you need friends. And without saying it, those friends are going to be the Avengers.
Yeah.
But you don't realize that at the time. You just think it's just drunken waffle.
You just think it's, yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, you need some, you do everything by yourself. You're too much of an individual. What I have is in the military is my friends helping me out or whatever. Right?
That's right.
But these things actually all resonate with Tony.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a big part of this movie. Even his conversations with Jarvis actually telegraph a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Which you wouldn't think so because it's an...
an AI computer.
Yeah. Does Paul Bettany do Jarvis throughout?
Yeah.
Which is kind of surprising because he adopts another character later.
Yeah.
When he becomes the Vision. So he does two voices, really.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they use Jarvis to make Vision, so it, you know, kind of flows.
Oh, nicely. Yeah. That's right. That's why. Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, so many of the ideas, the reason that you can make an Ultron... is because you already buy that Tony is the kind of guy who's like, I need to figure this out for myself.
Yeah.
Or by myself. And also I know best for everybody. Like he does have a complete martyr complex.
Yep.
He takes it all on himself and it all starts here.
That's right. Yeah.
And that is basically the core narrative of maybe all these movies.
Yeah.
Like more than any other character, these movies revolve around Tony Stark.
He feels the responsibility. And that's, like you said, the stuff in the cave, he finally gets his responsibility.
Yeah.
He sees his weapons killing people.
Yeah.
And he's like, that's not what I want to be known for. I mean, they touch on it earlier with the reporter and stuff.
Yeah.
Kind of like, what's your legacy? And he even questions like how he doesn't know how he wasn't close with his dad. So he doesn't know how his dad felt because his dad was also a weapons manufacturer, but also did other things for people, right? He designed the arc reactor and stuff, trying to
which is why his scenes later when he actually meets his dad, it makes it all the more meaningful.
It does make it way more meaningful, yeah. But he even questions that. So, like you said, throughout it, he feels the responsibility. And he feels like he's the most responsible person, which may or may not be true throughout all the Marvel movies. But that is where you understand where he's coming from.
Yeah, his attitude is always
his motivation.
That the buck stops with me.
Yeah, exactly.
And he adopts that responsibility.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's part of who he was before.
Yeah.
You know, because he was a goober before.
Well, he had no responsibility.
He had no responsibility.
He had all the pluses, all the stuff, but no responsibility.
Because I've thought about this, and the irony is if he goes back to his old life, the way he used to live before the cave, and before his Iron Man escape or whatever, and just goes back to being old Tony Stark, Stane wins. He kills him.
Yeah. Yeah, he would. Totally. He would win.
He would win. Yeah. Right? Like, not by the Iron Man suit or whatever means or whatever, but it literally saves his life because he doesn't know Stane is plotting against him.
No.
Something you don't realize the first time you watch it, but then you watch it again, like when Stane calls him about the weapons test, you think he's just checking up on him, but then it's revealed that he's plotting to kill him. Well, he's confirming he's there.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, like you're like, oh, it has a dual purpose. And this movie does so many of those little things that you're like, this is just a well-written movie.
Yeah.
And that's why it's a shock to me that they just ad-libbed so much of the dialogue.
Yeah. Well, again, all the scenes...
there's a lot of moving parts.
That's true. All the scenes were written in for a purpose and stuff. So it's just a matter of... I think they didn't want to nail down the character so rigid. And I think that's why they didn't have a full script, right? They wanted it to be fluid and moving with the actors and stuff.
That all that stuff they nailed. And some other things that I had totally forgotten about this movie is, for example, Tom Morello is an extra in this movie.
I didn't know that.
He is the very first guy Tony kills once he has the suit on.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I had to check that out. I'm like, is that Tom Morello?
That's so funny.
As a terrorist?
As a terrorist.
Did they sell it to him that he was a freedom fighter? Yeah. They're like, you're actually a freedom fighter. The Ten Rings, they're fighting oppression.
Like, yeah.
Like,
that's funny.
He's like, cool, I'm in.
Yeah.
But It is because Jon Favreau wanted this movie to have a rock and roll feel.
Oh, for sure. Well, I mean, and right from the opening scene with the AC/DC.
Starting with Back in Black.
Right in your face.
Yeah. I remember the first time I watched it, when I saw that, I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Promise.
This movie's on.
This movie, I'm like, I like the creative decision so far. Let's see where this goes, yeah. Right? But he was brought in as kind of a musical consultant.
Huh.
Because they did more a very rock and roll aesthetic. And yeah. Like I said before, I kind of consider Tony Stark to be like a rock and roll Jesus. So kind of
rock and roll Jesus.
It makes a lot of sense, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
The
choices they make. Let's talk. You talked about the Ten Rings. Let's talk about that. So early thoughts of this movie, it was going to be the Mandarin, which is kind of Iron Man's most well-known, in the comics, his most well-known villain.
Yeah.
Right, but and it's an interest. He's a very interesting character and stuff. They kind of had envisioned him as a scientist and megalomaniac who made these rings out of like alien technology.
Yeah,
but I think over the development, Jon Favreau again wanted plausibility. He felt it was too fantastical, too much to that, especially for the first movie.
Yeah,
he's like, it's too far out. You're not really invested in the character as much when you're like, oh, he's just a crazy scientist or whatever. Like,
yeah.
Like Obadiah Stane is a great villain because he's kind of just a regular dude who wants to control this weapons manufacturer and make money.
It's kind of funny because now that you mention that, because for a lot of people, you think if they would have one qualm about this movie, it is that it doesn't have a compelling villain.
Yeah.
I've heard that, but I disagree. Well, it's just because he's a quote unquote normal guy.
Yeah.
He's basically his executive rival.
Yeah.
In his company. And they don't have an antagonistic relationship because Tony is oblivious to what's going on.
That's true, yeah.
He doesn't think of him as his enemy.
He thinks they're friends.
They're friends. You know, and for all intents and purposes, for his part, that was probably true, right? Like, he's...
Yeah.
He probably... And plus, he's so into his own shit. Maybe he's blind to the resentment of the fact that Stane lost out on having the company when he was a snot-nosed 22-year-old.
For sure, yeah. Stane had the company after his dad died for however period of time.
Yeah.
And then Tony's like, I'm old enough, it's mine now.
He's basically the caretaker.
Yeah.
And it's not like Tony had all this EQ, this empathy, and really understood other human beings.
No.
You know, because he's an engineering genius or has some kind of behavioral problems, but we love him anyway, you know. but he wouldn't recognize Stane as an enemy, right?
No.
Because that's the other thing. You think of in movies, Xavier has his Magneto. Yeah. You know, like Spider-Man has Green Goblin or whatever. Yep. But you're going to come out the first Iron Man movie and have him just against some dude.
Yeah.
And it's not exactly a Clash of the Titans, right?
No. But I think that just goes to show how strong of a character Iron Man, like Tony Stark is that the most of the movie is him going through his changes. You don't need to have the strong villain in this movie.
No.
Because you're focused on him, right? Like, a lot of the choices they made was you being with him, learning and growing. Like, even with the suit and stuff. It wasn't just a matter of, like, okay, he built a suit. They could have done that scene very quickly.
Yeah.
But they spent a lot of time with you progressing with him, right? And you really start to feel for him and feel the character.
Yeah.
And pull for him. Instead of just being some superhero guy that has a suit. He's going to fight some dudes now. Because the higher-ups wanted a lot more action in the movie.
Yeah.
And Jon Favreau was like, no, we need to spend time doing this stuff to set up who he is.
Apart from when he goes to Gomera and the final fight at the end, those are the only real,
a little bit
at the beginning,
and out of the cave.
And escaping the cave. Those are the only real physical conflicts in this movie.
Yeah.
Which...
You spend a lot more time with him developing the suit.
Yeah.
You spend a lot of movie that. And that's where the comedy comes from, which is... That's the other thing that they like to infuse in Marvel movies that started with this one was comedy here and there. It's not a straight up, like you watch a movie like, you know, Man of Steel, and it's not a funny movie. And it's
I've never seen Man of Steel, but that doesn't strike me as a very funny movie.
Yeah, like
Superman's not a funny guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I mean, that's something.
Disclaimer, me and Mike are both Marvel guys.
Yeah, we're definitely fanboys.
Yeah.
But I just mean that's the big thing in the Marvel movies that, you know, what DC may be hitting the or missing the mark on is that the comedy that's spliced in there is what keeps you. Like, you can watch a movie with a ton of action, a superhero movie, once, and it's a lot of fun, but you're not going to keep watching it or be invested in those characters if they're not funny and interesting as well.
Well, I feel like if Tony Stark wasn't funny, they'd be missing the mark.
Yeah.
Because he's a charming guy.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a billionaire playboy, right?
very good at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even, and they don't talk about it in the movie, but like in the comics, obviously it's a big thing. He, you know, has his alcohol problems.
Yeah.
In the movies, he just drinks a lot.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, you can see that he's dependent on it. Like, he's like, oh, we just need to have a drink, like, all the time. Like, even Rhodey is like, it's not appropriate. We're working right now. And he's like, it's just one drink.
Yeah.
And then they get drunk on the plane.
And as soon as he's done showing off the weapons, he's like, all right, break out the hard bar.
He has a bar with him. He brings he has a bar,
a portable bar to a weapons
thing.
Case.
I mean, so he has a bit of dependency and alcohol dependency, like... They don't really talk about it in the movies because obviously, you know, these movies are for kids still.
No, but there's been, I know in the comics, long periods where he struggled with his drinking.
Yeah, the demon in the bottle.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's and that's the thing though that I do like, that they took things from the comics that they're interesting for the characters and they made sure that they highlight them. They don't gloss over them.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, a lot of superhero movies, you kind of get the basic of the superhero, but you don't get any of the depth.
Yeah. But that's what makes it authentic and lived in and real.
Yeah.
And that's actually what I feel like in this movie. More so, like, again, my thing is X-Men.
Yeah.
What has always bugged me for the most part about the X-Men movies is how much not like the comics they feel.
Right.
But this movie nails it in Tony Stark's case.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, like I said, I don't think anybody that's an Iron Man fan has many complaints except for possibly... not having the Mandarin as the main villain.
Yeah, yeah, because
that's in
like
the,
I said,
in the comics
that's like
been
the Magneto-Xavier relationship, the real antagonist of Iron Man, right?
Yeah.
But do you really need that right out of the bat?
No, and especially not for the first movie in the Marvel franchise. I believe they made the right choice in trying to make it more real and grounded.
Yeah.
And then they've sort of slowly gone in that direction, right? Like, Doctor Strange was a huge step for them. And they kind of resistant to that. Like, if you look at even the Thor movies, they try and explain the magic. Like, these are gods from another planet, and they're trying to explain it with science. Like, Marvel threw out, and that starts in this movie. They want to keep it grounded. They don't want to make it fantastical and crazy. They want it to be very realistic and believable.
Yeah, Doctor Strange is really their first movie, I think, where they really played with a metaphysic in that respect.
Yeah, well, I mean, and Guardians, too, were like, but they were like, well, we're in space, so it's cool.
Yeah, it's a little different when you're in space.
Yeah, you're allowed to get away with that stuff.
You know, that's their space rodeo, right? Like, it's...
Yeah.
The rules are kind of out the window when they're making it. And, I mean, you're talking about the Infinity Gems.
Yeah.
You're already talking about something incredibly fantastic.
Yeah, exactly. So,
it's all kind of par for the course there. But this is... very much an engineer's movie. It's very pieced together, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's, I would agree. The tenor and tone is just, it's, I was really shocked how much I enjoyed this movie coming back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, so, yeah, absolutely watching it. Well, I already know I love this movie, but again, I'm a fanboy.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's
yeah.
hard. It's hard for me to not watch a Marvel movie and love them. But
some love more than others though.
Yeah.
And you kind of have this pantheon in your mind of these are the top ones.
Right.
And this one doesn't get a mention, but it's hanging out on the outside, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think so. Speaking about that scene where he has the press conference with the cheeseburger and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I know in reading interviews with Robert Downey Jr., he insisted that it was Burger King. And people can play that off as, oh, it's obvious product placement.
Oh, this is product placement.
Yeah, but that actually has a lot of meaning to him, which a lot of people don't know, because in his own personal life... he was doing a ton of drugs and he said he stopped for a burger and a soda, went to the drive-thru Burger King, was sitting in the parking lot eating it.
Yeah.
And it was so disgusting. And he looked at himself and looked around his car and it was just full of dope and was like, this is my life. Like, this is, what am I doing? Like,
yeah.
And it was an epiphany moment, him eating a Burger King burger. And so he's like literally at that moment, he decided he went to the ocean, threw his drugs in the ocean and decided to turn his life around in real life. So when this moment was in the movie, he was like, oh, it's got to be Burger King. It's a shout out because in his personal life.
So it's a perfect fit for that scene.
It was a perfect fit. And so
yeah,
I think it's really funny that he decided, he's like, no, it's got to be Burger King. We got to add that in because it's a personal moment for him.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show how much he put in from himself into the character.
Yeah.
And why it's such a perfect fit.
Yeah. Like I said, I mean, I can't imagine anyone else doing it.
No.
Anymore. Like this role has basically been ruined for whoever puts on the mask next, right? If that day comes.
I honestly don't think they will.
Not. It's going to take some time and space.
I think if the MCU was rebooted, then maybe. Like, if totally start fresh.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's a thing that happens in Hollywood nowadays.
That's literally what it would take.
Because they continuing to make movies, I think as long as it's all tied in together, like Kevin Feige wants, I don't think you'll ever see that. There may be another version, like, you know, Riri Williams or somebody else gets the Iron Man armor, but they will not be Tony Stark. I don't see that happening.
I can see them doing a Riri Ironheart.
Yeah, something like that.
I can see that. Yeah.
There was also murmurs about the Harley kid from Iron Man 3. Getting access to the Iron Man suit and kind of being the next Iron Man, so they can have Iron Man. But, I mean, honestly, it would never be a main character, because how could you have another? Like, it's not Tony Stark.
Yeah.
Because Iron Man is, like, same as he says, like, what he says at the end of the movie, I am Iron Man. Like, Tony Stark is Iron Man. It's not a suit.
No,
even though
not.
A lot of people wear the suit throughout the movies and comics.
Yeah, yeah. But there's only one Tony Stark.
There's only one Tony Stark.
There's only one Tony Stark. Yeah. That's even a line in the movie. Tony Stark built this in a cave with scraps.
Yeah.
And the engineer's like, oh, I'm not
Tony Stark.
I'm not Tony. I don't know what to tell you, man. Not Tony Stark.
Yeah.
One thing I also noticed going off topic, but something else, is that in order to oversell the scene at the end, in terms of the suit design, I mean, we all know what Iron Man looks like, but you really get the sense of elegance and grace from the Iron Man suit as opposed to the Ironmonger suit.
The Ironmonger is almost like an extension of the Mark I suit. It's very basic and primal and gets the job done, and that's why it's bigger and strong. Like, it's bigger to be stronger, but it's a variation of the Mark I suit, whereas Tony's so smart, his future versions are, like you said, more elegant, streamlined, and, like, you know, less gaudy.
But I would say, like, Tony's suit is a fit for his personality.
Yes.
Whereas the Ironmonger suit is a fit for Stane's personality.
Right.
Like, he's armored it. The weaponry is like, bullets.
Yeah.
And missiles and very, like, that kind of tech. Whereas Tony is just, it's flares and pulses and electricity and charges
and very small missiles and stuff. If he's going to use them, like
small
the tank
missiles,
the one that blows up the tank and stuff.
There's a real elegance and grace to the suit, and it makes for a good contrast at the end because it's very cat and mouse.
Yeah,
in that final fight scene.
Yeah,
I feel like that scene drags on a little.
Yeah,
but it's mostly a pretty good ending fight scene.
They're just trying to. You know, up the stakes is what it is.
Yeah.
You know Iron Man's going to win, so they've got to come up with problems and reason. And then them throwing in, they wanted Pepper to help out, right?
Yeah, of course.
So give her a part in it, which is fine. That actually totally works for Tony. He needs Pepper one more time.
Oh, absolutely. And that's, again, we talked about it before, about the great chemistry between Robert Downey and Gwyneth Paltrow in this.
Yeah.
Gwyneth Paltrow actually has a lot of emotional heavy lifting to do in this movie and just nails it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like, you kind of always buy her concern about Tony, how she has to reconcile the fact that he's changed. She's like, well, I have to change. And his journey is very much a hero's journey in becoming a better man. Well, I mean, on the romantic side of things, it's like he had to elevate himself before him and Pepper could be together.
Yeah, well, and part of that, too, is the reason that she does this for him. Because it's above and beyond what she's paid for.
Yeah.
As they make abundant in the first few scenes. But she sees the better man in him. She sees the potential that Tony Stark has, right? Because he's always a genius. His best work is done when he's at home fiddling in his garage.
Just dicking
around.
Not
the public Tony Stark that's a jerk to everybody.
And she sees that person, right? Like, she already has a level of intimacy with him that, like, obviously none of the other women in his life have. Because there's a routine already, you know, like the shake your ass on out of here routine.
Yeah. She takes out the trash.
Also, I was about to say, sick burn at the beginning when she takes out the trash.
Yeah.
I do whatever Mr. Stark needs, including taking out the trash.
But he's literally, even after his change, and even more so after his change, because people expect the original Tony Stark, but she is all he has. Like, when he needs somebody to change the arc reactor out. And she's like, don't ask me and do that again. He's like, well, you're the only one I have. Like, what am I supposed to do?
Because, like, I mean, apart from Rhodes, he doesn't have friends.
No. He's like, you're very important. That's like a very tender scene. Like, in his way, he's just, that's as nice as he's going to be. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's kind of, and that's another way in which a small thing in this movie is so incredible. Like I said, they didn't really write it, but it's so incredibly well written. He's like, I'm not nostalgic. He was ready to throw that arc reactor away.
Yeah.
Well, it saved his life.
Yeah. She, well,
because of her, you know, relationship, her feelings for him,
her forethought and being like, yeah, you say you don't care, but you will.
Yeah.
And because, you know, she didn't think he was going to reuse it again, but she's like, you're actually going to care about this some down
day on the future. Her sweet gesture saves his life.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's actually a very sweet scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't throw it away. He doesn't open the gift and throw it away. He puts it on his desk.
No. It's obvious from the outset. I mean, even though how he acts, he values her opinion probably more than anybody else, actually. Yeah. Like, even though he's got his iconoclastic ways of being a real dickhole all the time.
Yeah. Well, she, like, again, he says she's all he's got. I mean, it's either her or the robotic arm, the Butterfingers.
Yeah. And right? Rhodes, too. When Rhodes blows him off, he's actually genuinely hurt by it.
That's true.
You know, because Rhodes talks about him before. He's like, I'm basically your fucking babysitter.
Right.
He's like, you don't respect me. And I think in his mind, we're only friends because I'm a high-ranking military official and you make our weapons, right? Like, you don't give a shit about people.
Yeah.
But it's so obvious that after the press conferences, how much he cares about people.
Yeah.
Where did this come from, right? But it's just, I think it was just, you know, the trauma of that experience. He took it and ran with it in the best way.
Yeah.
And that's why I think this is a really interesting hero's journey, because it's not, his struggle is against himself.
Yeah.
And he wins.
That's right.
And that, I think, is kind of the cool thrust of this movie.
Yeah.
Because, so I would agree. You don't really need a big bad guy in this movie.
You don't have the time to spend, you know, developing that villain. If you had somebody like the Mandarin as the first villain, you need to spend time developing that villain, being like, where does he come from? What's his motivation? Or he's just going to be a flat, evil, you know, dictator guy. It's boring, so you don't really need that. And the villain that they do have, I think, is perfect for the part.
Yeah, Stane's motivations make sense, but you don't really need to flesh them out.
No.
And he is an interesting enough character, played well enough by
Jeff Bridges. Well, it helps having Jeff Bridges.
It does really help having Jeff Bridges. Like I said, you don't really associate him with evil roles.
No.
But when you get quality actors, they can come up with good stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Him eating that cheeseburger.
Yep.
If you ever held a press conference, I guarantee that you'd be eating Burger King, too.
Probably.
Like, no one talks till I get my Burger King.
I also love that he comes out, he's eating the Burger King, and, you know, Obadiah being the surrogate father figure is like, he plays it all nice. He knows right now he's mad because he was supposed to have Tony, was supposed to be dead. He should have had him killed off.
Yeah.
But he's all nice to him. And he's like, hey, you got a cheeseburger for me?
Yeah.
And I love that Tony's like, no, I only got the one. And then during the press conference. And I need it. And then, but then during the press conference, he pulls out another one that he could have shared.
I never noticed that.
Yeah, he could have shared
he's
it
like,
with him.
I got a pocket burger.
But it's not yours.
Psych. I need this burger. Also, I need my pocket burger.
Yeah.
This is the thing about Obadiah, though. We should have always known he's evil because he's wearing a blue shirt with the white collar.
That's
the evil guy shirt.
That's the sign of the evil.
Like Job on Arrested Development, when he's a jerk, he has it.
Because he's the corporate guy.
Yeah. When on Futurama, when that guy gets unthawed from the 80s, the evil guy, he has it. I mean, that's Robert Kraft wears that shirt so all the time. So that's the evil guy's shirt, is the blue shirt with the white collar.
Yeah.
He should have known. I was going to say one thing. The only thing that rankled me in this movie, in the end fighting scene, Pepper magically is able to run across that metal gated grated floor in heels. I don't know how she managed that. That's the real superhero moment of this whole fucking movie.
Well, that's the movie magic, isn't it?
That
happens in a lot of movies that gets criticized, but it keeps happening.
Women
have to wear heels, but then
they do
magical things in them.
Yeah, that was to me is I'm like, sorry, that's where the plausible deniability goes out the windows. Is how she was able to run on that grated military like flooring in those heels. I'm like, sorry, that doesn't work. But
I like how that's the part that got you.
Yeah, I'm like,
not
I'm
the
sorry.
Man flying in an iron suit.
But no, this just takes me out of the reality. I'm sorry, it just ruins it for me. But yeah, let's talk Easter egg stuff.
Sure, there's a lot of stuff. I mean, they throw a lot of stuff from the comic. And that's one thing that I appreciate about this is that Jon Favreau and, I mean, Robert Downey Jr., everyone involved really understood and read the comics and put a lot of that into it, knowing the fan base.
Well, okay, before we get talking into the Marvel stuff, the personal one for me is in the scene when they're flying over in the jet, the rap music is playing is Ghostface.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you know Ghostface, but he goes by Tony Stark, the Iron Man.
Is oh, I didn't know that. That's
his,
funny.
Is his sec- because when the Wu-Tang started, they all have secondary rap names.
Yeah.
And Ghostface was always Tony Stark, Iron Man. His first album was actually called Iron Man.
Wow.
Yeah, and apparently he had a scene in this movie where he was supposed to be in it. But it's a deleted scene.
Oh, yeah.
Which, that's it's a shame.
Yeah.
But that's where, you know, where the worlds of rap music and comic nerds interconnect, right?
It also shows how deliberate, though, they put things in.
Oh, they thought about that stuff.
They thought about that. And the music is on point. We've touched on that earlier. The music is perfect. It really gets you going in this movie.
And Iron Man, of course, the Black Sabbath classic. And you couldn't make an Iron Man movie and not include
it. And it even works well with the line that was ad-libbed. They originally didn't want him to say that, "I am Iron Man." Right? They didn't. He was going to go with the bodyguard thing, which they make fun of, which is what
happened.
And he
called an audible?
Yeah.
It works so much better.
It's not that's not how they originally had it. But they were like, it works perfect. Like, you got to go with it.
Yeah, because the ending of the movie is perfect.
Yeah. And they allude to the fact, like, it's a bodyguard. He's like, are people going to believe that? And the funny thing is, in the comic, that's for years, that's what it was. That he was Tony Stark, and he paid Iron Man to be his bodyguard. Like, he played it off like he funded the Avengers, but Iron Man was in the Avengers.
His bodyguard.
It didn't come out till he was Iron Man for a long time. But in this movie,
obviously before Civil War, because that was the whole point of Civil War, is revealing your public identity, right?
Well, in the comics, you mean?
Yes, in the comics.
So that was a
in
big
the comic
thing.
Event, Civil War.
Another reason why this was such a big thing in this movie is going forward is it got rid of secret identities.
Right.
Going forward in all Marvel movies.
Yeah.
That was a choice they made that changed the whole MCU.
And it's the nature of superhero movies, period.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that is always the central conflict in superhero movies, is protecting your secret identity.
It just goes to show how invested they were in the fans, right? They threw things out there from the comics. They don't have to. A lot of other superhero movies don't do that. They don't bother.
Yeah.
But they throw things in
or
there. Or they outright change things.
Yeah, just
they
to
throw
make
them
a movie.
Out there for the fans, which I really appreciate. There's a lot of little things, like the Roxxon name is a major corporation in Marvel in general, like the Marvel comics.
Yeah.
And it's throughout. Fing Fang Foom is on a billboard, a movie billboard in the background.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The more obvious ones, like the Ten Rings.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they took away the Mandarin character, but they wanted to keep the Ten Rings because that's important.
Yeah.
And the nice thing is they're able to use that in the future. Right?
Yeah,
going
no.
forward, he comes up like there's a Ten Rings guy in Ant-Man trying to buy the Ant-Man
suit. And then they're going to have Shang-Chi in the Ten Rings.
That's right. They're going to be able to use the Mandarin character now. The real Mandarin character, not the fake one.
And then it lets guys like you and me geek out about shit that other people just don't care about.
And that's exactly that. And that's what it is. They threw it in for people like us that would notice. That,
yeah.
Like, even when he talks about changing the suit to gold, because when he wants to make it out of the satellite titanium alloy, the gold, it would be gold. And he's like, that's ostentatious. But in the comics, the Iron Man suit was gold for a long time.
Yeah. And the original suit that he builds to escape the cave is very much like the Mark One.
It is. It's silver. Yeah.
Yeah. It looks, and it's very
clanky, like
very
a tank.
Very clanky, like a tank. Yeah.
Like a survival tank more than.
It looks a lot like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I think that's one thing I really appreciate about this movie is with them throwing those little things in there. And that was when I first viewed it in the theater. I remember seeing those things going, oh, you know, how many people get that? But I appreciate it.
Well, it's done with craft and care.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like more thought went into this movie than, like I said, maybe than what was necessary.
Because it probably was more than necessary. That's exactly what I'm getting at.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to say, again, I think I mentioned it before, but I was really surprised how much I enjoyed this upon a rewatch, that it doesn't sit kind of near the top of the pyramid in terms of when we think of the MCU movies. But as a standalone, it was fantastic.
I think it's right up there. And I think the other thing to note is that it doesn't feel distant. So you can watch it and it doesn't feel like, oh, wow, this movie's way older than Endgame. Like, it feels relevant to that movie.
Yeah.
So they tied them all in so well throughout the whole thing. This movie is just part of it. It's not, even though it's the very first one, they didn't really know their clear wave they were going. They actually, it's the footprint for the future of the MCU.
Yeah, this movie and Endgame are really bookends of all those movies and Tony's story.
Right, which is why the end of Endgame, after the credits, there's no scene, but you hear the clanging of the iron, which is from this movie.
It's the same when he's building the mask.
The same clanging when he's building the mask. That's exactly, yeah.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's even more emotional now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So, my biggest takeaway from this movie is to, like, I always knew what it was about, but I never really put it together in that it's the story of a man finding his heart, which is such a huge metaphor. I don't know why I didn't connect it earlier.
But, a metallic man.
But a metallic man finding his metallic heart. But, like, in reality, it's Tony Stark finding his heart.
Yep.
My final takeaway and thoughts on Iron Man, I mean, I think this movie isn't as thought of as much as other movies in the Marvel Universe.
Not really in the MCU.
Not as loved as much, but I think it stands up there with them. And it's the birthplace of all the MCU, so you have to start with this movie.
And if this movie was not a success, we wouldn't have had... It would all the other stuff. It's predicated upon this movie. That's it doesn't happen otherwise.
You wouldn't have Captain America picking up Mjolnir.
No. Yeah. That's, you know, A to Z, that's how it happened, right? So, and then it starts here. Yeah.
All right, well, that's all we have to say about Iron Man today. So make sure to check us out on Instagram, beers.n.banter.mc, and hit us up in the comments for any other shows you want us to talk about. Or, give us some hate if you like to. And,
we encourage that.
We encourage. So, party on, Colin.
Party on, Mike. I mean, that's Robert Kraft wears that shirt so all the time. So that's the evil guy's shirt.